It is in the Bible. And the Bible, and it does say all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable. So we want to see what we can profit from when we look at scriptures that are less well known to us. Judges is a book that outlines for us the tendencies of our human nature. And although we are freed from sin in an eternal status and in a position with God, it still is resides in our body and gives us grief from time to time. The tendency of man is to be full of himself. And that's just the way we are. It's to redefine our existence so it's all about us. It also outlines the character of God, and that character is to continually perform saving acts through his grace and mercy. Our flesh only damages our fellowship when we do not rely back on the grace and mercy of God. We continue to try to rebel and stand in our own flesh. He doesn't move away from us when sin invades our life. We are the ones moving away from him. We see that there. He is always there through those cycles we've seen in Judges. He is always there welcoming us back into that close fellowship. If we heed the still small voice of God, it comes as a gentle reminder and we can move back into a close walk with him. If we walk and rebel against it, the result of our rebellion starts to add up to more negative consequences for us. Remember the cycle we saw in Judges, and that was sin. The people sinned and they fell into bad times and they cried out to the Lord. He saved them and they had peace. And that's in a macro version of a whole country. It could be also a micro version of individuals within that country. We now live in grace, not under the law, but the human tendency is not change. We want to be our own measure and not to be constrained by God in any form. You can see this in our own nation. There was a time when we were more constantly acknowledged God, his goodness, his supremacy. There was a time when they started Congress and Supreme Court sessions with a prayer. Yeah, it seems a little absurd now, you know, to think of that, because we've moved so far from that. But we prospered when we followed that example. Over the years, in our comfort, we've slid from seeking him to being content with our own wisdom and choices. That was the oddity of Adam and Eve, you know. Knowing the good that they had, they still chose to slide and make some pretty poor choices. We can be the same. We can make those same poor choices, which can make our life much more difficult than it was intended to be. My weekly interaction, I don't know who you interact with, but my weekly interaction with hurting people revealed that on a personal, individual level, some of this same destruction is taking place because they've chosen to leave God out of the equation of their life. We use our own wisdom, and when we use our own wisdom, it just doesn't go so well. Remember on Easter, we talked about Jesus being our mediator. He's the one who can mediate for us. He's the one who can help us to understand. But when we continually ignore that offer and we become our own mediator, thinking we can solve our own problems or the problems of those around us, we just get ourselves into a bit of a bind. In the cycle of that sin, servitude, supplication, and salvation, the nation always suffered. The individuals always suffered. It took returning to God in a major way to heal the nation, and we saw that. We saw that in the book of Nehemiah when we looked at that as well. Jesus came and offered that to the nation of Israel, by the way, and they chose not to accept it, that wouldn't be something, that wouldn't be a direction they would go. They would continue to live within the burden of the law, which they felt so comfortable in, which is kind of a strange paradigm. The daily minor adjustment of our refocusing is something that we have to do. I don't know how you, if you guys, I, was going to do a show of hands, you know, but I won't do that, you know. I'll just pick on Dennis instead. Not really. Not today. You guys look so yellow. So, but they were pink last week. I don't know if you noticed this, but I do. If we minor adjust, if when you hear the still small voice of the Lord saying, don't do that, don't go there, or do this, help with this person, you know, the burden is light. The yoke is easy. And but if we continue to ignore that and we continue to act in our own strength, it starts to get pretty heavy because we just weren't made to do that. Did you ever consider that in the Garden of Eden, the tree that they partook of was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Humans weren't created to make decisions about right and wrong. That was supposed to be left to God. He was going to do that for us. But instead, we had to go say, hey, we'll manage that pretty well. We'll go eat of that tree, and we'll manage right and wrong really well. If you were to grade humanity since the fall, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, you know, how are we doing on this managing right and wrong? I wouldn't think most of us would get an A. You know, it's just because it's a responsibility we weren't meant to have. This is how we get ourselves in trouble, taking responsibilities that we weren't meant to have and assuming we can handle them. Even the point of Jesus being our mediator, you know, and if we ignore that, we're taking a responsibility we weren't meant to have and saying that we will do just fine, thank you. That refocusing on God, a good God in a fallen world, can happen in many ways. Music is a big part of refocusing on God. Musicians can say things that speakers couldn't say and get away with it. And, you know, I love the phrases like music begins where words leave off, things like that. You know, I mean, it's a deep reaching into our soul that word, just simple word content like this can't do. So I urge you to find a lot of, I hesitate to use the word Christian music, so I don't know how to say it. Music that acknowledges God's position in life. I need to define that because that can help us. That can help correct us. Getting in the Word each day a little bit, or a devotional guide, meeting with friends in a mentoring or an encouraging manner. All of these things help adjust our focus just a little bit, make it a little bit better. Otherwise, we slide, we drift, like we talked about before. A church family, I mean, nowhere in the New Testament does the Bible say get together on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock. It doesn't say get together on Sunday at all. It's a tradition that, you know, came from the Reformation. And I've told you before, Martin Luther was not a morning person. And the reason we meet at 11 is because he started the tradition that, and that was as late as he could have morning mass and still be morning mass. So he had it at 11, you know, and so we have it at 11. And that's kind of our tradition. And if we had it at a different time, it would be quite upsetting to some people, you know, and because we're victims of habit. And that's all wrong, as long as we don't exalt that as some sign of Christian absolute. But meeting together as a group, fellowshipping a bit, being encouraged by somebody else who's going through the same struggles and how they got through it or how they're getting through it. Getting a little content maybe can help. The music is an encouragement. These kind of things can help refocus us. We get wrapped up in our concerns of the world, and these are not necessarily bad. When the snow falls, we have to shovel it, right? I mean, this is the way it is. When the brakes don't work, we either have to get it done or do it ourselves. We have the physical cares of this world that we have to take care of. We meet the needs of our children. We do that mentoring. We do those things. But it's not just a physical world for us. There's a spiritual element that we feel deeply and that we want to reach out to God and feel and know that He is interacting with us. So after being especially involved in a lot of physical activity, we need to take the time to refocus and consider how God is in our lives. What part do we want Him to play? Does He play a minor role? Does He play a major role? Do we really reach out to Him? And then, of course, is there somebody else that would be someone we should reach out and help in some way or another? Those are the challenges that we have. We don't help people as an arrogant busybody interfering in their life. We try to be more creative than that, Jesus was pretty good at helping people. Do you ever notice that? And they liked it. We've been looking at Samson, and he's a hard guy to look at for me because it's just such a waste. He had such great potential. But most of his acts weren't for God or for his nation, as he was called to do. Most of his acts for his own personal gain. So far in what we've seen, he's shown little concern for God or the nation or others. His energies have been wasted or totally used for his own selfish pleasure. Remember, he was called a Nazarite, set apart not for personal pleasure. In fact, the rites of the Nazarite meant that you weren't going to have even the regular pleasures that everybody else had. You had a specific purpose. And his goal was to begin to save Israel. I was thinking about this week, what it would be like if the disciples, instead of following God closely, had chose to follow Jesus as Samson did. You know, well, maybe one of them did. You know, Judas didn't end up quite so well, but I still give him a little more credit because I think he was at least a zealot he just wanted what he thought God would do, not what God was necessarily intending to do. So there's people who were called by God to serve him and chose to serve themselves, and people who did their best to serve. When I look at the disciples' life, their legacy, they're held in high esteem by us. Despite their weaknesses and strength, they're held in high esteem. But when we look at Samson's life, and we look at it by his choices, at least early on, it's with shame and sadness. We say, what a waste. The man was gifted with something that very few people were ever gifted with, according to the Bible, and he wasted it. It's easy to say, well, that's the Old Testament, it doesn't apply. But as my mind wandered to my many acquaintances, I see many of them going through the same struggle. Many of the teenagers I work with going through the same struggle that Samson's going with. Going through the central pursuit has consumed us to the point of self-destruction. Turning to God is often the last thing that they do, and that's what we'll see Samson do here. And so we're at chapter 16. It's the last chapter that we have, and it says, and I read the first verse last week before we split, but for those of you that weren't there, remember, Samson's not to cut his hair, he's not to drink, and he's not to be unclean. And sensual acts, certainly outside of marriage, would cause him to be unclean. But it says one day Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute, and he went to spend the night with her. Gaza is a Philistine city straight west of Jerusalem, and not a place he should have been, period. So the people of Gaza were told, Samson is here. So, and obviously his fame, his attributes are well known to people. So they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him that night at the city gate. They made no move during the night, saying, at dawn, we'll kill him. They have their plan made. They're going to wait till morning. The city, remember in those days, each evening city gates are closed and locked for the security of the inhabitants so they couldn't be invaded in the city. So they're going to wait till he comes to the gate in the morning, and then they're going to get rid of him. But Samson only lay there until the middle of the night. And then he got up and he took hold of the doors of the city gate together with the two posts and tore them loose, bar and all. And he lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. The word there means to pluck up. So he just like plucked these things right out of the ground, which would not be easily plucked because otherwise they wouldn't be secure gates. There's a debate, if you study it, as to how far he packed those gates. The farthest estimate, if you take it literally, would be about 40 miles. The nearest estimate would be about 10 miles. Needless to say, this is not normal human strength. This is something supernatural happening based on a gift that God has given him. Now, we would like to say that he learned from this lesson, wouldn't we? We would like to say, this was not a good time. This was a close call. I will stay out of those areas. But we immediately follow this with the story in verse 4. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, if you can lure him into showing the secret of his great strength, how we can overpower him so that we may tie him up and subdue him. Every one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver. Now, I don't know if you have ever looked up the artwork of Samson carrying the gates. How many of you done that? Anybody do that? Okay. There's a lot of paintings out there of Samson carrying the gates. Now, I don't think they're eyewitness accounts, personally. But remember last week we were talking about how would you draw Samson? Well, guess how they draw Samson? As some, you know, superhuman, muscular, you know, Charles Atlas kind of guy. But see, even the Philistines here knew that that wasn't the case because they knew it had to be a secret. We want to know what the secret is. Why is he able to do this? Because he shouldn't be able to do this. They know that he follows his God. We'll see that at the end of the story. So they want to find the secret to his strength. So in verse 6, so Delilah said to Samson, tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued. And he answered her, this guy, I don't know. I don't know if this guy is very bright. It just doesn't seem like it to me. I just can't believe he would continue to answer her. You know, like just find somebody else or, you know, go for a hike or something. But he said, if anyone ties me with 7 fresh thongs that have not been dried, I'll become weak as any other man. Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh thongs that had not been dried, and she tied him with them. With men hidden in the room, she called to Samson, the Philistines are upon you. But he snapped the thongs as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. So this is number 2 of his betrayals, first with the other person, then now with Delilah. And I think by this time he should be getting a clue and really doing better, but it doesn't seem like he's going to, because in verse 8 it says, in verse 10 it says, then Delilah said to Samson, you've made a fool of me. And he hasn't figured out that she's trying to make a fool of him, you know, that it doesn't work that way. You've made a fool of me. And you lied to me. Come now, tell me how you can be tied. And he said, if anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I will become as weak as any other man. So Delilah took new ropes and tied him with them. Then with men hiding in the room, she called to them, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. Now, one other thing to consider here, unless he's faking like he's sleeping, it takes a bit of time to tie somebody up with new ropes so they can't move. This lends the idea to me that he's passed out drunk. I don't know how you guys look at that. She could pull this off without noticing. I mean, he's like, oh, I'll just lay here and let her do that. You know, I don't think so. I think that there was probably a bit of excess in these areas. And he's not supposed to be doing that either, by the way, right? So he's in all sorts of places and doing all sorts of things that... And you might say, you know, how does this apply to me? But I don't know if you guys work with young people in our community. I won't pick on older people, but the young people are in all sorts of places doing all sorts of things they shouldn't be doing. And the results are drastic now. The penalty is drastic. This is not something that just applies to a long time ago. These poor choices are still with humanity. Remember, remember his love of making the little riddles early on, his love of being witty. He thinks he's clever. So he can do this stuff and get away with it. He has the special strength from God no man can take from him. And he thinks he's really smart. Verse 13, then Delilah said to Samson, until now you've been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied. And notice she appeals to his sense of right and wrong, which is amazing to me that he's going to feel guilty for that after what she hopes to do to him. But of course, you know what's going to happen to her if she fails. Remember what happened to the other lady who failed? They burned her and her father. So the stakes are pretty high here. So it's important to her. And he replied, if you weave 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom, tighten it with a pin, so I'll become as weak as any other man. So while he was sleeping, Delilah took the 7 braids of his head, wove them into fabric, and tightened it with the pin. Again, she said, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He woke up from his sleep, pulled up the pin and the loom and with the fabric. Now, once again, I don't know how long it took to weave his seven braids of hair into the loom, but I assume unless she's a world-class, even if she's a world-class, it's going to take a while. So this guy is definitely out of it, in an extremely exposed position. I'm really not sure why she just didn't kill him right there and get the money, but maybe, you know, I don't really quite know. Maybe they didn't want him totally dead. They wanted to keep him as they do when they finally get him, but anyway. Verse 15, then she said to him, how can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? I cannot imagine how she says this and pulls it off. I mean, there, alcohol has to be involved. I'm kidding. Just excess. This is the third time you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength. And see, at this point, I think Samson has deluded himself that the strength is within him. He'll be able to pull this off no matter what happens. With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death. So he told her everything. No razor has ever been used on my head. And he said, because I've been a Nazarite, set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become as weak as any other man. And it's interesting to note in verse 18, it says, when Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, come back once more. He has told me everything. She knew it wasn't a riddle, a joke. She knew it was true. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called a man to shave off the seven braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. And then she called, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He woke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. And you notice it's capitals there. Again, it's that, you know, the covenant God of Israel is not going to sustain him in this situation because he is completely ignoring all the things that God had told him to do. And it's not that God reaches down and punish him. It's the fact that the punishments that naturally would come to him if he ignored God are going to be the end result of his actions. He awoke and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free, but he did not know the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes and took him down to Gaza, binding him with bronze shackles. They set him to grinding in the prison, but the hair on his head began to grow. I touched on it briefly earlier, and if you look earlier in the Old Testament, you find how a Nazarite repurifies himself if he's become impure. And one of the things, he has to shave all of his hair off and burn it. And then as it grows back, he will be as well as other cleansing rituals, he'll be rededicated to God. And it's interesting that he loses his hair here, but it says it begins to grow back. Now the rulers of the Philistines, verse 23, assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying, our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands. Dagon, if you've ever studied this individual god, is an extraordinarily brutal god. Human sacrifice, child sacrifice. He's one of the ones with the laying the child on the red hot griddle to offer him to appease the god. Just as brutal of an image of God as has ever been created by humankind. And they feel that their God has delivered them. And they say this in verse 24. Our God has delivered our enemy into our hand, the one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slain. While they were in high spirits, they shouted, bring out Samson to entertain us. So they called Samson out of prison and he performed for them. And I don't know what he did when it says he performed for them. When they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple, so I may lean against them. Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there, and on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. And now 28 is a verse that I wish would have happened in Samson's life a lot earlier, but it doesn't happen until the end. Samson prayed to the Lord, and notice it's all those capital letters, meaning he's getting really serious with the Lord. Oh, sovereign Lord, remember me. Do you guys think God ever forgot Samson? No, that wasn't the problem. The problem is that Samson forgot God. But we always see it this way as humans, don't we? I mean, we're always not quite getting the picture. But he says, oh, sovereign Lord, remember me. Oh, God, please strengthen me just once more. and let me with one blow get my revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes. I'm still not sure that he really understands what God wanted him to do. The revenge factor, which is part of his everyday living for 20 years, is probably not where God's trying to take him, but there's still some maturing to be done in heaven for us. At least I certainly hope so, because I've got quite a ways to go myself. Then Samson reached toward the central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived. And his brothers and fathers, whole family went down to get him. They brought him back and buried him at Zorah and Eshtol in the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had led Israel for 20 years. Remember last week I listed a few of the wrong choices that Samson had made. They weren't mystical choices, they're just practical choices in real life. Didn't take any real smarts. Don't hang out where you shouldn't hang out. I mean, you know, we see this. This is what we urge our high schoolers to do. Don't go to that party. Don't hang out where you shouldn't hang out. We're not trying to cramp your style. Well, maybe we are a little, but not in the sense that you think. You know, don't go to those destructive places. As I thought about that this week, I thought, unfortunately, destructive things, we don't have to go to them in our culture. Do you understand what I'm saying? They come to us. Where Samson had to go into the land of the Philistines to partake in the kind of impurity that he wanted to take, the immoral behavior. But see, in my culture, all I have to do is turn my computer on to any ESPN or anything like that. And somewhere during that, I mean, even Bible Hub, which if you ever used it, and now and then have an ad that's inappropriate that somebody purchased. You know, this kind of stuff just comes to us. Magazines, it doesn't matter. It comes to us. I think it's even harder to avoid it now than maybe it was in those days. He desired what was forbidden. Many of us have known, picked on young people, I'll pick on adults. Many of us have known adults who have continually made wrong choices till their desire for what was forbidden got the upper hand and they made what we would consider a real foolish choice. He made foolish vows. He stole to fulfill those vows. He thinks he's clever. He gives in to his anger. He doesn't walk close with God. Instead, he walked close with the world. Remember early on, or last week, I asked you how you think this is going to turn out. We all know how it's going to turn out when you make those decisions. It was such a waste. So we want to learn from his poor choices. We want to walk close with God. It could have been so good. The pure joy of walking close with God to a good God, he lost. We still have our lives. We still have our choices. We can choose to walk close to a good God. We can accept Christ's offer to be our mediator. We no longer have to struggle with all those struggles alone. Through the grace offered us in Jesus, we have freedom, enjoyment, the ability to help others with heavy, heavy loads. And yet it still boils down in when God moves us, when his spirit moves us, for us to respond. Either sometimes it's big things and sometimes it's little things. It's called, I like to use the term, being mindful of God all day long. You know, you're just mindful of God. What does that look like? Well, that's lawful, but that's maybe not profitable. I'll just let that one go. You know, this one's okay. I can do that. I can enjoy God here. I can hear his voice. I can hear his voice without guilt. If I were to make many of these other decisions, when I hear his voice, it might be when I want to do what Adam and Eve did, and that's run and hide because I, you know. We know. If I were to ask you right now if you were in fellowship or not, and by that I mean there's just a close union between you and God, you would know if that's true. You know in your heart, in your spirit, whether you're walking close or you're kind of slid a little and you're just saying that's okay. And that's something that no one else knows. Most of you are really good Pharisees. I mean, I can behave really well not really well. Only those closest to me, sorry, Val, would know that I'm not, you know. But we can behave pretty steadily. You guys are responsible citizens, you know. Oh, good for you. It doesn't mean that you're walking close to the Lord. So each day, to enjoy Him to the fullest, to be the freest that we can be, we just walk close. We just ask the Lord to help us see, make the decision that let us enjoy Him to the fullest. Let's pray. Lord, sometimes we read troubling stories in the Bible, and they're heavy. And yet, if they're there for us to learn from, help us to learn. Thank You for Your grace and Your goodness, that You're always there. You're always there when we call out. And just help us to call out a lot more. In Jesus' name, amen.